This is Global Air Force with your host, Jim Rome.
Praise God. It is another beautiful day. On today's broadcast, we feature the teaching of Randy Clark as he's teaching at a school of healing and impartation. Now, some of the things that he is going to address in this classic message. Do miracles still happen? Can we minister like Jesus and the disciples, as they did in the early church? In this series, you will learn the biblical answers to these questions, supported by powerful modern-day testimonies. So, here he is as we broadcast part of this session with Dr. Randy Clark.
What I'm talking to you about today is healing and the glory, and the connection between glory and healing. The number one way that God glorifies His name is through doing miracles and healings. In my own experience, there had been no teaching on this in college or seminary at all. I went to Louisville, Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and graduated with an MDiv degree from there in 77, and Baptist College prior to that, where I majored and minored in religious studies. But I never had heard anything about what I'm talking to you about today, healing and the glory, and the connection between glory and healing, connection between glory and power. It's really interesting, though, in our praise of God, across denominations, there's certain songs that's old songs now, but that's very, very powerful, one of which was Glorify Thy Name. Glorify Thy Name in all the earth. You know, we could sing that, couldn't we? Yeah. It's a powerful song, and it's loved by almost all denominations. But what we don't realize, what many of us didn't realize, that as we were asking, and this is actually a prayer, we're asking God to glorify His name. Now, this is a dangerous prayer for evangelicals, a dangerous song for evangelicals to sing if they really understood that in singing this song, the number one way that God glorifies His name is through doing miracles and healings. And so I was talking to Heidi one time, and she and Roland were sharing. They were out in the bush in Mozambique, and our friend, mutual friend, Mark DuPont was there, and he was supposed to speak. There were several hundred people, and around the perimeter were Muslim clerics, scoffers, mockers, and witch doctors trying to work their spells against the Christian community. And trying to, just mocking what the Christians. And as they were worshiping, the glory came in a visible, tangible, to the naked eye. Didn't have to have the discernment gift to see it. Everybody saw it. And the glory cloud came down. When the glory cloud came down, nobody could stand up. It wasn't a question of did they prostrate themselves or was it voluntary or involuntary. No one could stand, including the witch doctors, the Muslim clerics, and the scoffers. They were on their face too. The cloud was so bright that Mark temporarily couldn't see well to even read his Bible. And I said, well, Heidi, you're going to have to preach. I can't even read. I can't even see this brightness of my eyes. When the cloud lifted, there wasn't one sick person left in their midst. Neither was there one demonized person left in their midst. Everybody had been healed. Everybody had been set free. And there wasn't a Muslim cleric left. There wasn't a witch doctor left. You say, oh, did they just get dematerialized? No, they got saved. They went down an unbelieving, mocking witch doctors, and they came up from the glory, followers of Jesus Christ. Now, I tease about this, but that's the answer to the age-old problem between Calvinist and Arminian, sovereignty and free will, elect or predestined to damnation. The answer is this. You know, it's called tulip theology, and one of them's, of course, the Arminians believe that grace is resistible. And the answer to that is, in the glory, the Calvinists are right. It's irresistible. When the glory's not there, the Arminians are right. It's resistible. So, Doug Oss, who was used to teach, who has a PhD from Princeton and taught it for the Assemblies of God denomination or their headquarters, seminary or college, I forget which one. I was with him once out in Utah, and he was planning a church out there, and I was preaching for him, and he told me this. He said, you know, after Pensacola came, the group from Pensacola came to the headquarters of Assemblies of God in Springfield, Missouri, and the power of God fell, and he and another professor went to this church to preach that night, and the glory came. And he said, we weren't doing anything, and just all over the place, people started yelling, I'm healed, I'm healed, I'm healed, I'm healed. He said, in a matter of seconds, everybody had anything wrong with them there was healed. And he said, we didn't do anything. We were just watching them. I'm healed, I'm healed. Boy, it's a lot easier ministering in the glory. There's no sweat in the glory. In Raleigh, North Carolina, I have a friend, John and Maureen Sanger, and they took over a church that Mark Sharon had started. And one night we were there, and I had, this is the first trip I'd taken four new interns with me, and all these guys are now powerfully being used of God. And I was teaching on a sermon, Open Heaven, and this sermon talks about a lot about some of the manifestations we had seen in Brazil and some of the angelic activity. And while I'm in the getting started in this message, about 15 minutes or so, something like that, into it, all of my interns, before that happened, a woman over here on my left, she stood up and she said, do you see it? And then all my interns, it's like they're on the front row, they're just prostrate like this on the floor, just prostrate themselves on the floor. And people, their jaws are dropping. And people over here coming over here, and I'm wondering, because they have the spotlights on me, and I'm thinking, see what? What are they seeing? Because I really can't see because the lights are blinding me to what they could see from their angle. So I came down off the platform, and over here on my left, you know, about this far over, was this, about this big around, from the ceiling all the way down to about, I couldn't see it once below the knee. But anyway, it's all the way down, it's a pillar. And you know, like on a really hot day in the summertime, you look across a flat field and you see those translucent waves going up. You could see the translucent, it's like a pillar of those translucent waves that somebody had taken like a 5-gallon bucket of finely ground, glitter, gold, green, gold and silver, red and green, I think it was. And had thrown it in there, but they were illuminated too. There was light coming out of it, and it looked kind of like a milk, like layers of the Milky Way, and it was swirling like this. And I'd never seen anything like that. And in 1984, when I first got really blasted by the Holy Spirit, now that's a nice theological term to use because you don't have to argue with anybody about what was the evidence of it. You know, you just don't have to argue. You can just say, I got blasted. And growing up on a farm, I used to go frog gigging as a kid. And sometimes when you're walking in the early part of the morning, you know, like 2 or 3 in the morning, and the dew's on, and you walk into that, and you got your gig, and you walk into an electric fence, somebody. You know, no one has to tell you, take it by faith, that you just touched electric fence. It's self-authenticating. And one of the evidences that it causes all the joints and the ache, you know, they really ache from the electrical shock that just went through your body. Well, in 84, that had happened to me, and my joints ached the next day from the power God had coursed through my body. In a meeting we'd had in my Baptist church. In 89, I had almost died, felt like I was going to die from the power of the Spirit that was going through my body. I was on the floor and I was screaming and I was just sweating profusely, and it's this power, and it lasts like 45 minutes, and for an hour afterwards, I had to hold my hands up my chest because they laid them down past my belt line. They hurt so bad, I had to pull them back up from the power. So having had those two experiences, I wasn't really quick to jump into that cloud. I mean, there was a... But curiosity, you know. So I looked at it, and I walked up to it, and it didn't shock me. So I stepped into it. And it was the most awesome, peaceful thing I've ever felt. I'm just looking at it. I don't catch one of those, touch it. They wouldn't let me just, you know. So with that, I stood there for quite a while, and then I got to thinking, well, I'm the leader of this meeting. I need to do something. And then I think, well, what do I do? How many of you have Bible college or seminary, either or? Raise your hand. Now, keep them up high. High. Okay. How many of you were taught what to do when the glory cloud shows up? How many, remember that course? What to do when the glory cloud shows up? Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is, you know, this is my first chance, and I didn't know what to do because they didn't teach you what to do in the glory. I don't think they ever expect you to glory cloud to show up to tell you what to do. So I'm thinking, well, he's here, we ought to worship him. So we went back into worship. We worshiped for quite a while. And then I got to remember, oh yeah, he told me when he's here in his worship, in worship, he's here to heal. So let's pray for the sick. We did. And there was like 2/3 as many people over here that got healed as over here. And the only difference was, this was where the glory was, closer than that was. Now, it wouldn't have taken me very long after that if I'd been an astute person to want to move over to this side of the building. And so then I thought, well, now what do we do? And then I thought, well, I was talking about the manifestations of when he came, so that must have been what drew him, and so I'll just go ahead and finish the sermon. My bad. you know, I second-guessed myself the next day, and I felt like, you know, if I ever had the chance to do that again, which I think I will, I know what I'm going to do this time. Because, you know, as a matter of fact, as I'm preaching, the glory cloud, it kind of went up like this and went like this, went all the way across the front and just hovered there. And the pastors told me in the last 4 or 5 years since then, it's happened 2 more times where it just came and in like that, and that was the first time it had ever happened. So I've told the Lord, Lord, if you ever do that again, this is what I'm going to do. For those of you who raise your hand, pastors, would you like for me to tell you what I think is the best thing to do if you're ever in a meeting and the glory cloud comes like that again? This is what you do. You just take the church back into worship, and as they're worshiping the presence of God, ask for all the terminally ill to line up and just have them stand, go step into the glory cloud and let them stay there for a song and then step out and let the next terminally ill person stand in the glory. I'm convinced that'd do a whole bunch better than anything else you could do. And then after all the terminally ill have gotten through, then we'll just let the sick start. My only thing is I'm afraid this meeting would... How many of you have ever read Branham's books about the supernatural? You ought to get those. Bill, shouldn't they? They ought to get those. Some of the best books. And we know that he didn't end well and as far as doctrinally. But, you know, God, I'm convinced, God doesn't honor us because we've got our doctrine right. He honors us because we love him and have faith in him. And some people have very little education. He could barely read, really. Be that as it may, there's this sense of the presence of God that's connected to the glory, and to the glory is healing. And I what I did is I did I took the concordance and I looked up glory, and I went through every reference to glory in the Bible, and in both in Hebrew and Greek, and then I tried to categorize them, or at least make there's 18 associations with glory in the Bible. Now, that's not an exhaustive study, but it's selective, but it's the major ones. And out of these 18 categories, I listed how many times glory was connected to that incident. And so let's just look at them real fast. Glory is associated with the cloud, 23 references, the cloud of his glory. Now, that's the most. However, there is one more than that if you put miracles and healings together. So you see it in the cloud 23 times. You see it in fire 16 times. His glory is connected to healings 16 times. But if you put healings and miracles together, then you have 30 times, because 14 for miracles, you have 30 times that healing and or miracles is connected to the glory of God, which is the number one way God reveals his glory, biblically speaking, in the Bible. So how could we believe that God would allow a form of Christianity void of healings and miracles if he's concerned for glory, if he's concerned about his glory? Because that's the number one biblical way he manifests his glory. It's a synonym for power 9 times. Glory is associated with future state of existence, in our future state of existence, presence of God 12 times. It's connected to judgment 5, ministry to the poor once, revelation of God's name once. Glory causes things to be consecrated, 1 reference to that. Glory is connected to God's house 3 times. God's glory, God receives glory through the worship of all nations, or all nations shall see his glory. There's 8 references to that. God's glory is associated with angels 7 times, the New Testament only. What God told Moses to do in order to see his glory, there's 1 reference to that in Leviticus 9, 6, and 7. God gained glory for himself by extending the borders of Israel, there's 1 reference to that. Glory appeared like illuminated rainbow 1 time. Glory appeared as light or radiance 8 times. Glory associated with suffering 8 times. And by the way, just a little side note here. If you read most evangelical commentaries, they'll talk about this thing of the suffering and the value of suffering and the positive thing of suffering and the reward connected to suffering and the glory connected to suffering. But and then they make a fatal error that the text doesn't bear witness to. It's a jump in logic, because in the context, every time they're talking about suffering, it's suffering for the gospel, suffering persecution, or for the gospel. Never does it deal with suffering sickness. And the commentators move it from its context and will extrapolate and say, therefore, when we suffer in our sickness for Jesus, we're bringing glory to him. And fulfilling, and anyway, it's not, that's illegal. You're not supposed to do that. It's taking it out of context and reading into the text. It's eisegesis instead of exegesis. And then at one time it talks about glory is too deep to be comprehended. Now, so I want to deal focusing on the relationship of glory to healing and miracles. Out of what we just looked at, I'm going to narrow down this study now just to the relationship between glory and healing and miracles. Now, when we begin, we want to look at Moses, the lawgiver, Isaiah, the prophet, and then we'll look at John, Peter, and Paul. Moses, in Exodus 16, 4 through 14, God spoke to him and said, in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord. And down in verse 10, while Moses was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked toward the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud. And then what happens is there's the manifestation of the manna and the quail. And the glory that was in the cloud was connected with this miraculous provision that God was doing that was associated with his presence had come, but so was also his miraculous provision. Now, in Numbers chapter 20, in 6 through 12, Moses and Aaron went to the assembly, from the assembly to the entrance to the tent of meeting, and fell face down. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And then the Lord speaks to him and says, what I want you to do, out of the glory, and said, I want you to speak to the rock and provide water for the people. Well, Moses gets upset. I mean, Moses doesn't follow instructions very well, and he got upset, and he called him, listen, you rebels, must we bring you water out of this rock? And then he strikes the rock twice, and he's supposed to have spoken to it. But anyway, the Lord said something interesting in verse 12. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not trust me enough to honor me as holy in the sight of the Israelites, we will not bring this community into the land that I have given them. Well, first of all, just back to glory, in the quail and the manna, he said, you'll see my glory in the morning. In the morning is when the manna appeared. There's also the glory in the cloud. The glory was all not just in the cloud, but it was also revealed in the miraculous provision. And then when the glory came and he spoke to Moses out of it, he's revealing a need, a provision for the people of God. And this time it's going to be water. But when they don't bring about the miracle in the way that God had told them to, God, for the people's sake, still works the miracle, even though his servant was not obeying. And then he says, but you didn't honor me enough, didn't trust me enough to honor me as holy. Now, I know that miraculous provision still brings glory to God today. And there are things about obedience that God is looking for that brings honor to him. I've never, I've always felt like, now God, you can give me a vision. I'll know what to do with it. I probably wouldn't have known what to do prior to that. I'd probably might have made some of the mistakes that Branham did in that situation. Now, glory is also revealed with ministry to the poor. In Isaiah 58, 6 through 12, you can read through that. It's a wonderful passage about the glory of God and it being our rear guard and healing is going to come. Then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday, and it's all about the healing that's going to come. I want to say this. The place where I have come to expect the greatest degree of healings is in the areas of where there's the greatest poverty, like what they're seeing in Mozambique amongst the poorest of the poor, the dead are being raised, and all these things are happening. It's because this ministry is so, their ministry is so committed to the poor. There's something about it. When I was in St. Louis, we would see more healings when we would go down to the projects in downtown St. Louis and go up into the areas that pretty dangerous areas, but we weren't afraid. A much higher percentage of people getting healed when we were working with the poor in this way. And not only there, but often when we would go out working with the poor, just recently the two teams were with us in India, and that's where they saw all those blind eyes opened up. It was one of these really, really poor villages, and just one little village, just like 12 eyes, blind eyes opened up. And disproportionately higher than, what you would see somewhere else. So I feel like that God's heart for the poor also reveals his glory, his compassion as well. Now, when we look then to John, I think John, we have a lot of my understanding about glory and power and even how to understand Paul was influenced by a verse in John chapter 2, the turning of water into wine. John chapter 2, verse 11. This, the first of his miraculous signs, Jesus performed in Cana in Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. So I feel like, all right, Lord, show me. When he reveals his glory, how did he reveal his glory? He revealed his glory by doing this miracle. And the miracle caused the people to put their faith in him. And it's turning water into wine. Well, I remember in the 70, around 1970, 71, I was in college, and I was reading Mel Tari's book, Like a Mighty Wind. I'm so glad that came along, because prior to that, the books I'd bought right out of when it's Jesus Movement Revival, I was called to preach in, was Hal Lindsey and Late Great Planet Earth and Salem Kerbin, Guide to Survival. Well, I'd just like to tell you that the value of Mel Tari's Like a Mighty Wind is a much more valuable book to read And if you want to feed yourself on something, I really, really think that you are feeding yourself maybe good entertainment, but not good theology, or when you're reading books like Late Great Planet Earth and these books about the secret rapture and everything like that. Why not read about revival? Now, here's the interesting thing. There was a great criticism that rose up and said there was exaggeration in like a mighty wind. There's an exaggeration in there. They exaggerated. Well, I found out later when I was staying with the Bakers, I looked at the room I was in, and there was a picture there, and it was their wedding. Well, the guy in their wedding was Meltari. He was the best man at Roland and Heidi's wedding. And Roland told me this. He said, I asked Mel about that question, and the accusation was that you guys exaggerated what really happened in revival. And Mel told me, he said to Roland, he said, Roland, the truth is we didn't tell a lot that we could have because we realized the American church couldn't even begin to believe it. Instead of exaggerating, we didn't tell at all. It's the opposite that's true. Now, it's really interesting that the criticism came against Meltari's book, but very few people have criticized the other books that's proved to be prophetically wrong on almost every prediction that was made. Glorification is connected to revelation and faith to do the works of the Father. It's implied in the passage to read of the Father's glorification of Jesus that he was glorified by the words and the works that the Father gave him. Now watch, he was glorified not just with the words to speak to the people, but with the words about what to do, that is, with the revelation that creates the faith which produces the miraculous. He was also glorified. Jesus just wasn't glorified by the words that he spoke to us about us. He was glorified by the words he heard that caused him to declare what the Father is about to do, and we can be as well. And John 8:54, Jesus replied, if I glorify myself, my glory means nothing. My Father, whom you claim as your God, is the one who glorifies me. And one of the ways that the Father glorified him was by the revelation that he gave him of the secret things that he wanted to do. Now, Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, and this is one reveals the glory. At the report that Lazarus was sick, looking forward to the miracle, John 11:4, he says this, when he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it's for God's glory. So that's so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Now, at the funeral of Lazarus, after he had died, in John 14:11-40, then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? What's he talking about? The resurrection of Lazarus. The resurrection brought forth the glory of God. So why could we not believe that God's raising people from the dead today? You know, once people found out I was collecting these stories of people being raised from the dead, I'm getting stories all over the place just coming in. The people start coming out of the woodwork. Said, I don't tell people this because they'll think I'm crazy, but I prayed for this woman and she died. I prayed for her and she came back to life in the hospital. And there's a lot more people who have literally prayed and seen somebody raised from the dead that they don't ever talk about because they felt like up to a long point nobody in the church would believe them. And now that we begin to talk about, not only do we believe you, but hey, we're excited about it. They're coming out of the woodwork. Okay, the Apostle Paul. This is one of my favorite passages where it's in Colossians. Christ in you, the hope of glory, in powers for miracles. Paul speaks of the glory given to us through Jesus Christ to live a new life. By strong inference, glory and power are used synonymously here by Paul. Colossians 1:27. To them, God has chosen to make known amongst the Gentiles the glorious riches of this mystery, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory.
Flying with Global Air Force.